This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different other podcasts, but the reason why I think this is the case is because it works. I've been using it for years, and the biggest benefits that I've realized is that it gives me more energy. I feel like I'm getting a full and healthy diet. My poops are better, and I'm sorry to say, but it's true. And so if you're somebody who really wants a healthy diet where they're confident they're getting all their micronutrients, go on and head over to drinkag1.com/Farzad. drinkag1.com/Farzad, where you'll get a free vitamin D plus K2 bottle and 5 free travel packs. Thank you so much to Athletic Greens. And now onto the podcast.
Because if they would have canceled the $25,000 car in earnest, that would have been, I think, in my opinion, that would have completely shifted the conversation around vehicle affordability long-term for EVs. But in a world where full self-driving doesn't exist, you know, so... But yeah, I don't know if, do you have any take on that from what you just saw?
I mean, the biggest thing for me looking at them putting out a $25,000 car is it's going to really show if the affordability thing is the issue, or is it that people don't want EVs, and the $25,000 is going to figure out that problem, whether it's less of the demand for EVs or if it's because of the price point. And a $25,000 Tesla, will find out real quick as soon as they put it out.
What does your gut tell you?
My gut tells me that there are going to be people out there. There's going to be a percentage, maybe 20% or whatever, people who are on the fence that will move into electric vehicles, will move into a Tesla at that $25,000 price point. But my gut tells me that there's a larger population out there that are not going to switch as quickly as what me and you have talked about before. I think the adoption is going to take a lot longer than what most people think.
Okay. And some of the reasons why?
Just anecdotally looking at like my comments. So you guys are Tesla bulls. You're in this bubble. We know that my stuff's more mainstream. If I put anything out that has anything to do with Tesla or EVs or whatever, it doesn't get watched. It will not get clicked on. And it's not just that my market base is in somewhere like Florida or Georgia. We're not getting the good old boys are just watching my channel. Most of my viewers are California and New York. And from what I've seen, people are tired of hearing about EVs.
Hmm. Interesting. Have you seen what they're citing as like the things that's making them tired? Is it the charging? Is it just the viability of the vehicle, the range?
So the biggest thing there's range anxiety. That's a big thing. What I feel like it is that even if somebody is wanting to get into the EV space, if they're thinking that they can rotate into it, the mass market, most people don't have more than one car. So they're not going to be able to take the leap into something that they're not comfortable with if that's their only thing. And another thing is too, I mean, the Tesla, the EV buyer is a more affluent customer. We know this. And I would assume, Farzad, you drive only Teslas. That's all you got. You have a house with a garage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hans, do you have a Tesla?
I actually don't. I have two ICE vehicles. Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of people that Tesla is going to have a hard time convincing to get one of these EV vehicles. EVs is you're going to see that, they don't want to have to worry about the charging at these charging stations. We've already seen problems with that. And people don't want to spend that time. They don't know that it doesn't take, it's not like a gas station stop. So that's something that it might be true. It might not, but the perception is it takes a long time to charge these things, right? Perception is something mm-hmm. hard to overcome without education. Education costs a lot of money. So you're going to have to get it to where people can charge at home and they're okay with it. But people that live in apartments, people that live in houses where they got to park at the street, the less affluent people, which is going to be your big selling population that you have to get to the next tier to be able to sell these Teslas, they don't have the option to park it in their garage and charge overnight. So they're going to have to go to a charging station. If there's any limitation in their town, in their city, where they can't just easily go to a charging station and they feel like it's going to take them maybe a little bit longer than to fill up a tank of gas, that's one of the hurdles that Tesla either by education or by actual charging or the ranges that these cars have. That's something that they're going to have to overcome.
Yeah. I think the point around the charging, like how convenient it is, I think that's such a good point, because unless you have a place to charge at home, right, a lot of the value proposition of the EV kind of gets lost a little bit, where you have to, you know, if you have a gas car, you have to go out of your way to refuel. You do, but the refueling is quick, and it's usually on the route to where you're going to go anyway, right? So, but you do have to take a little bit of a slight detour, right? Whereas if you had a garage at home, there's zero detours. It's just when you're home, you just plug in and you're good, right? So you get the benefit of it. So for the people that don't have access to that, right, they're not going to be able to take advantage of an EV. Where I'm trying to figure out, there's a hesitation around people that do have a garage, right? Because I think, I forget how many households there are in the United States. But in my head, what I'm trying to work through is like, if you have a garage, if you have a garage and you do less than 200 miles a day of driving, right? To me, it seems like electric vehicles are a no-brainer
It's a no-brainer. And I would agree with you on that. Yeah, I'm not trying to argue that case.
No, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, yeah. So what I'm trying to get through is like, I'm trying to understand the mentality of that portion of the population that will not adopt an EV. And to me, it just seems like, yeah, go ahead, Hans.
Yeah, I have a question on that, because Brandon, your audience tends to be more used vehicle buyers, correct?
No, I cover the car market, and it's more I think on skewed to the news goes more skewed to the new car sector.
The new cars? Okay. And is there, you know, do you think there's a partisan leaning for your audience? You know, are they more left leaning, kind of neutral, both sides of the spectrum, more right leaning?
I can't tell you. I know that just from anecdotally looking at our comments, there's extremists on both sides, and those are the ones that typically are going to voice their opinions in the comments, right? So we're going to see both of those, and typically the majority of people that are going to be somewhere close to the center, they're not likely to be the ones that leave comments, right? So that's just they're not.
They're smart.
Yeah. But what I can tell you is our demographics, and our demographics are majority California, majority New York. So what I can tell you about just states in general is that most of those are going to be more liberal leaning. I mean, take that with what you will. I mean, there's going to be conservatives in those states, obviously, and maybe that's exactly the ones who are watching my channel from those particular states. I can also tell you that my demographic who watches my channel, 75% of them are 45 years and older. So it is going to be people who have more money. I feel like I'm falling into the range of the people that you're talking about who are, say, that can buy a Tesla, who do have a garage, who are more affluent, they have the options. They have the options to have multiple vehicles, so they're not put in a place where they have to, okay, we have to take the leap of faith on this Tesla for my only vehicle. And still, they don't want to watch EV stuff. And that's it's a hard thing to track, but I can just tell you from the back end of my channel and from what my demographics are, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, the reason that I'm asking those questions is that, you know, at least also anecdotally from my standpoint, in, you know, just general people that I have conversations with about Tesla, if they are not fully convinced of the climate change narrative, a lot of times the EV topic just gets lumped in with climate change. And they feel like it's, you know, they've been beat over the head left, right, and center with this whole narrative. And anything and everything EV means that, you know, all of the push towards EV is just part of that narrative. And they don't understand that there actually are very legitimate, you know, technological advantages that are going to play out over the next 10 to 15 years and are basically unsolvable. Like, there's no way that in 2040 we're selling even, you know, 10, 20, 30% new vehicles as ICE vehicles. And all of those reasons are structural reasons. All of those reasons are cost reasons. All of those reasons are technology reasons. None of those reasons have anything to do with, you know, saving the climate. Those are going to be self-interested consumers that want to save money and have more convenience and a better product that are going to drive that secular shift. But, you know, we're not there yet. And people just associate the climate narrative with EVs. And so they're just resistant to it, you know, from an emotional standpoint. And I think that until there's enough people around them that are driving them that they wouldn't have expected to drive them, that they'll, you know, that stereotype type will basically persist until they have a personal experience that really bursts that bubble for them.
Well, what I can say is, I mean, humans they're creatures of habit, right? And they tend to stay in their own bubbles. I mean, you guys, you cater to people that are Tesla drivers, they're Tesla bulls, they're all on the AI scene. They know what a Tesla can do, why it's good, why it's bad, all that stuff. And I can tell you from the other side, because I get viewers from both sides. What I can tell you is I'm not seeing a lot of stuff about climate change. That's not one of the things that's being pushed. It's more about, well, I can go to a gas station. I'm comfortable with that. Why change? And, I got a buddy who's got a Plaid, and, he was telling me about the full self-driving stuff, whatever. And he loves it. And, he had an older guy that, would come up to him and say, yeah, it's great that you're driving in this Tesla and all this new technology is great. And it confused him because usually you see, older men and they don't want to go into the technology standpoint. He's like, well, why do you think like that? He said, well, the same thing happened a long time ago when they introduced power steering. And he was like, there were so many people out there that were like, I don't want one of these cars that have power steering. What if I just barely touch the steering wheel and it just goes off the road? And now we know the case that it's not to be, that power steering is a great thing, but it took time for people to see that and adapt. And I think this is the point you're trying to make, is that we have to have a sample size of more than just 10 years, however long Tesla has been out. But it might have been out that 10, 15 years, whatever, that that Teslas have been there and this technology has been going through. But for it to be commonplace to see Teslas all over the road, that's only been in the last, few years. And you're going to have to get these people who are in the middle, because you got to get them first before you get the anti-EV people. You've got to get a sample size where you're seeing them pop up. Oh, okay, all in the neighborhood. You're going to have to see their friends, their families start to go in there, but that's going to be a difficult place for Tesla to hit that next tier of people because of the nature of the human being, the nature of gravitating to what you know, and the nature of gravitating to people who think the same as you think. And that's going to be the barrier that Tesla is going to have a difficult time tearing down.
Yeah, I think those are all super fascinating points, and I agree with all of them. I think the conversation becomes timeline, because, you know, I don't think you're saying that they will never change. Is that the change will need to happen over a longer period of time once they feel like that thing is better than the thing they have now, and it actually fits their life better than the other thing that they had. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah, and the thing that I worry for a lot of these people is that the change is going to come whether they like it or not. And the reason I say that is because the more you get adopters of EVs, then gas has to go through the roof at that point, because then it is not as lucrative for these companies to drill for oil. And then at that point, then you have to spend more money to drill for the oil. At that point, then you have to charge more for the oil. So then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where gas goes through the roof, so more people are shifted to EVs. And then at that point, the more people that go to EVs is a domino effect. The more oil has to go up because the demand for it goes down. It costs more to drill for it.
Yeah, exactly. I think something you were talking about, and it sort of reminded me of this chart that I... This is from YouGov. YouGov is a a polling site, and they did a study. Let me see if I can put us in a better place here. So it's a little bit bigger. Cool. So they did a study. Are electric cars better for the environment than gas cars? Most Democrats say yes, but not Republicans. And I want to look at it from like a partisan perspective. I want to look at it all U.S. adult citizens. I think what's really interesting here, so of all the people that they polled, so there's three categories. So there's five categories total. The top two categories are better for the environment, more energy efficient. The purple is electric cars. So a majority of U.S. adult citizens think that EVs are better for the environment and more energy efficient, or no difference, a large majority. But what I find extremely interesting is that it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican or whatever, most people think that gas cars are safer to operate, more affordable to maintain, and more reliable. And what I find really interesting there, so if I use myself as a person, right? Those three categories, I can unequivocally say objectively that these three are actually, from my experience, you know, and I've driven gas cars my whole life up until 2016, is that these three, for me, are significantly more skewed towards EVs. And so, but what I find interesting is that a large majority of the U.S. does not think that's the case. And I think that's it's exactly what you're talking about, Brandon, is that there is this barrier. There is this barrier of either belief or actuality that people don't have, that are not either accepting or haven't seen yet. And I think that we have data backing up exactly what you were just talking about as you were saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. So pull up that chart again. I'll get you into the perception of the non-EV, the anti-EV, or even the person on the fence. So safer to operate. When a gas car fails for whatever reason, that's not popping up in the news. If FSD pulls into a crowd of people, that's going to be all over the news. So that's what people are going to see. So that's going to lead to perception of that. More affordable to maintain. People are hearing that insurance rates are higher on EVs. They're hearing that it's crazy expensive to replace a battery. They're hearing that if it's a Tesla, you can't take it to your local mechanic to get it fixed. You got to take it to Tesla. That costs more money. So there's your perception on that one. And then the reliability, I think that goes back into, okay, where can I get it fixed and what's going to happen to it? And just the unknown of, okay, what's the maintenance on it? That kind of stuff. I think that third thing is going to fit back into the first two things that we just talked about.
And for whatever reason, there's still a perception by most people that I talk to who aren't in the bubble that they're going to have to replace their battery every 20 to 50,000 miles. And that it's going to cost them, you know, $4,000 to $10,000 to do that every time. And so, yeah, that's obviously doesn't seem to be true in the case of Tesla. But that's the perception of a lot of people that I've spoken to on the topic.
Right. And this is the barrier. This is the complication that Tesla is going to have to overcome, and they're going to have to overcome it with education. Don't call it advertising. I know Tesla doesn't want to advertise. Don't advertise. Throw that money into education budget and then throw that on. Don't put it on Twitter, because everyone on Twitter, they already know what the deal is. But I mean, throw some education numbers out there. Say, okay, batteries are rated to last this long. I mean, we've got Teslas out there with this many miles on it. You don't have to take your car in for an oil change ever. There's people out there that don't know that you don't have to get an oil change on a Tesla. There's lots of people. I could guarantee you all the anti-EV folk, there's probably 50% of them that don't realize that you don't have to get your oil changed with a Tesla. And I can tell you, somebody like just someone who doesn't want to go in and deal with a mechanic, that would be the number one selling point to someone who doesn't have to take off work to go get just regular maintenance done on your car. And people don't know that Tesla needs to spend money on that.
Yeah. No, I for the last couple of years, I was on the boat that I thought that that Tesla would be able to overcome a lot of those shortcomings by just focusing on the product and just focusing on affordability and just pushing as many cars as they can. But I think as time goes on, I think what you're talking about and sort of what other people have talked about in the past, where Tesla has to spend resources and education and getting people to understand the value proposition, it becomes even more important the deeper they go into their production, right? Because I think what's interesting about the EV story is, like, for the last 12 months, we've seen the growth of EVs, at least in the Western world and in the United States, the growth of EVs year over year has come down dramatically, because it went from 100,000 cars a year to whatever, a million cars a year, whatever that number is. So it went through a huge boom, but now there's this sort of plateau that we're starting to hit. You know, my argument is affordability, but it's also education. It's obvious that education and getting people to transfer to that technology also needs to be there. But like countries like China and everything, that the growth keeps going. The growth keeps going in that country, even though, you know, it's not part of the Western sort of way of how we think about transportation. They're booming over there. And eventually they're going to try to sneak in into other countries as well over time, as long as the countries allow them, either, you know, through tariffs or whatever. But the point I'm trying to make here is that EVs and Tesla in particular have been able to grow a lot in the last few years, but now they've hit this plateau. Now they're at this point where they have to figure out what is the next stage for them. And it's going to be fascinating to see the next 12 to 24 months as Ford, GM, and everybody else, GM, they've scaled back EVs. They're going hard into hybrids now. I'm sure you've seen those articles, and I saw you cover that as well. They're abandoning EVs in a way. They're delaying it, but in reality, I think what I'm hearing is shift resources to hybrid because we can't penetrate the EV market for whatever variable they're deciding. Hybrids is in their core expertise. They're able to make money on hybrids. That's the most important part, I believe. They lose a ton of money on EVs. They make a bunch of money on hybrids. And so they're moving over to hybrids. And the population is also, you know, we have data that shows this. They're not either quite ready for EVs, or they don't know that they're ready for EVs. And so they are reacting to the market, whereas a company like Tesla is trying to position itself for what they think that people will want in 5 to 10 years. And that's the way I'm viewing the market right now. And then we have this whole dynamic right now going on too that you highlighted, Brandon, where there was a post that you put on X. Let me see if I can find it. The one you have pinned on your profile. Let me pull it up real quick here. There was a post that you put on X that said, this is not just a Tesla problem. So this is a Tesla sales plunge far more than expected. This was from CNN back in April 2nd. This is not just a Tesla problem. Demand is gone for the whole car market. Tesla is going to show it first because of the direct-to-consumer model. Other auto manufacturers to follow as dealers turn down allocations due to lack of demand for all vehicles. Can you expand on this a little bit? Because I'm really curious to see what you're seeing here.
Yeah, so Tesla, you're going to see movements in the market, and Tesla is going to be able to foreshadow a lot of these movements because their model is direct to consumer. This is why Tesla is so great, right? Because you don't have to deal with the stupid dealers and stupid market adjustments, add-ons, all the BS that they want to put on these cars. It's a great thing, but it also means that they're going to be able to show sales declines or sales booms, depending on the direction of the economy, depending on people have money to spend. Now, I mean, we have to take that with a grain of salt because Tesla might not be what the whole market experiences because they're in the EVs. But my expectation from the market is that the rest of the market is going to follow suit with what Tesla is putting out because Tesla is big enough for the mainstream buyer now that they're going to be able to show the ebbs and flows of the market. And we've already seen that, okay, Stellantis, their sales are down. They came out 2 days after Tesla's deliveries missed, and they're 10% down overall. So I think this is going to be a theme across the market, and it's an affordability problem. It's a economy problem. It's just general people that they're holding on to their money right now. They do not want to buy cars, whether it's a Tesla, whether it's a Ford truck, F-150, whatever. They're holding on to their money, and we're seeing it at Tesla. We're seeing it that these dealerships are starting to turn down allocations because when you see a company like Stellantis, they come out and say, okay, our sales are 10% down. That's not to consumers. That's to dealers, Stellantis, Ford, GM. They are wholesalers. They're manufacturers. They make vehicles. When they make a sale is when they deliver a vehicle to their dealerships. And if dealerships are now turning down allocations to the tune that Stellantis has to say that their sales are down 10%, then Stellantis, their dealers, were feeling it months ago. because they're going to fill up their dealer lots. And then at that point, Stellantis is going to find little holes. They're going to channel stuff. They're going to get dealers to move their a lot of their vehicles to service loaners so they can still stuff some more cars in there. And at this point right now, there's no more stuffing left to stuff. So at this point, you're going to start seeing these manufacturers have sales that are missing expectations too. That's what we're going to see going forward from Ford, GM, and especially Stellantis. And overall, I don't think it's just a Tesla problem. It's hitting the whole market right now.
Yeah, I think that's a point that sometimes gets missed when I see people sort of reacting to the Tesla news, because that's, you know, they go to the buyer directly. All the other manufacturers have that that thing in the middle that they can use to soften their blow. I think, let me ask you this question, since you've been in the car market for so long, does this year feel any different than any other years, and in what ways, if that's the case?
So one thing that we're experiencing now, and it's, I mean, I just repeat just pretty much what I just said, is over the last 3 years, allocations weren't turned down. Dealers are trying to get their hands on whatever they could get their hands on. They load it up and now they count. But what I'm seeing, because I'm a used car dealer, so what I can see is the auction. So I can see kind of the same thing that Tesla sees when it reports its numbers, where I can see that, okay, if dealers are selling vehicles or if they're not, by the amount of trade-ins that I see at the auctions. So when somebody takes in their car to trade it in, those dealerships, they don't keep them for the most part. They'll send them directly to auction. So if there are fewer trade-ins at the auction, that means there are fewer deals getting done on the franchise dealer level, meaning that there are fewer new cars that are being sold. We've been seeing that for the last month and a half now, and it's getting pretty bad. It was bad beforehand, but it's getting even worse now, because we were supposed to see this big boom from spring selling season, from tax return season, and we saw a couple weeks that were really good, and the auctions had an increase in inventory for those couple weeks, but now we're even less. There are fewer trade-in vehicles coming through the auction this past week than there were even before spring selling season. So that's scary. That's scary for the car market and for a lot of these franchise dealers.
Got it. And so just to make sure I fully understand, so in a quote unquote regular year, you would be seeing more action right now after the sort of the tax season and the spring selling season, because there would be more demand during the second quarter. So I know seasonally in the first quarter, that's the softest quarter for autos. You know, it's after, you know, Toyota-thon and whatever else that happens in December, right? November, you know, Christmas, that holiday season, there's a ton of metal being moved. Then Q1 is sort of this reset year, this reset period where, you know, auto dealers are trying to get their inventories back up. You know, you're trying to rebuild your stash or whatever else. And then by the second quarter, you should see an uptick from the first quarter, because, you know, people are starting to build up for the rest of the year. But just to make sure I fully understand what you're seeing right now, at least in the last couple of weeks, it's not a lot of data, but it's a little bit of a trend. Let's say you're seeing less movement now than you did in the first quarter. Is that correct?
Yeah. So typically during this time of year, we should be full out as far as new car dealers, used car dealers. Spring selling season is a thing. That's a term in the car market. Busiest time of the year for both new car dealers and used car dealers, because there's more money in the system. This year, there was a couple weeks of it, and then it kind of died out. And recently, I had an interview where I talked to a Nissan franchise manager, and they went from having about 60 something new cars on their lot. Within about a 2 month span, they're having over 200 brand new Nissans on their dealership. They're having to park them in the back. They're having to find spots, and they're not moving them. And now we've seen Nissan come out and say, okay, we're going to help our dealers on the front end and the back end. They're paying their dealers right now extra money for each additional vehicle they're able to take and put on their lot. And then on the Murano specifically right now, let's fill it up with Muranos. They're giving their dealers, I think it was an extra $1,000 or $1,500 for every Murano they sell. So they're helping them on the front end to take the vehicles and the back end. Nissan is in trouble. I mean, for them to do that, we're going to start seeing a lot more incentives come out, because there's a lot of dealerships in this same situation. And what he said, I said, what's the game plan? I mean, you got all these cars still coming in. what are you going to do? He said, well, we're going to have to tell Nissan, we got to back off a little bit. And if you have enough dealers, which in my estimation, all these dealers were loading up, and all about the same rate. And then now they're all at their tipping point. So it's going to be like a light switch cuts off to these manufacturers. Like, okay, we got dealers taking cars. And all of a sudden, they're done taking cars. And it hits the whole country at relatively, at pretty much the same time. That's going to be really bad because all these manufacturers are going to have to come out and they're either going to get creative and move some stuff around to appease their shareholders, but that's just kicking the can down the road, right? And that's what I feel like they've been doing with this channel stuffing over the last quarter and a half, and why you can see that the big three, they've been putting up still record profits, good quarters, quarter after quarter, but their dealers are suffering. And you can see, I mean, watch what car dealership guy, his post, he's talking to these franchise managers, just like I am, and they're screaming for help. They're going to ask for help, but they can only take so many vehicles. And then all of a sudden the spigot's just going to get turned off. And that's real bad for shareholders.
So how much of this basically carnage that is in store for the car dealership model, which, you know, it has served a great purpose up until this point, but moving forward, I don't see how the overall car market, you know, maintains that business model into the next 10, 20 years. How much of the blame for that do you think is going to be aimed squarely at EVs?
I mean, none of the blame is for EVs at this point. It's the problem.
But do you think in the media, like from a public perception standpoint, are the dealers going to squawk about the transition to EVs being part of what it is that's putting them out of business?
No, what they're complaining about now, you'll have dealers like Ford dealers, and Ford are not seeing eye to eye on the EV rollout. And that's been in the news. We've talked about that quite a bit, but they had to do these big build outs at their franchises to be able to put these Mach-Es, these F-150s there to be able to sell them. And we know they're not selling. Ford can mark down these Mach-Es as low as they want to. Still, nobody's buying them. But that's not the big problem. I feel like where the dealership model that you're trying to get to, the big blame from the dealers is going to the manufacturers saying their MSRPs are too high. You're giving us the cars are too expensive. We can't sell them. And then from the manufacturer, they're like, okay, we put too many add-ons and addendums and stuff during the last 3 years. It was your fault then. But now they have to kind of work together because the manufacturer has to give the dealership money to be able to get them to be able to lower their price enough to roll out cars to still make the margins they need to pay their bills. But where you're talking about like the breakdown of this kind of dealership model goes away, it doesn't go away. There's so much legislation put in place that the dealership model, it can't go away because
all of the companies that sell to dealerships can absolutely go bankrupt. Like, they can't sell cars that don't exist because the companies that create them are driven to bankruptcy.
But then where are all the cars coming that people are going to go buy? Tesla can't produce enough to service everyone on the road.
It won't be just Tesla. Like, there's going to be lots. Any new car company, and, you know, it can be a company that goes into bankruptcy, restructures and comes out and just wipes the slate clean of all their prior engagements. Like, there's going to be a lot of carnage and restructuring that's going to happen moving forward, because everything, you know, this is the thing about EVs versus ICE cars that 99% of people just don't understand. Structurally, EVs are getting cheaper and cheaper every year, and ICE companies are getting more and more expensive every year. And that's for the simple fact that, you know, we've squeezed every last drop of efficiency that we can out of an ICE vehicle. And then there's all these other extra layers on top of it that make it more expensive, where we're trying to get more features out of it. We've got structures like dealership models that are trying to get more money out of it. And then you've got the vehicle manufacturers themselves that are being subjected to more and more regulation at the both state and national and then international levels. And so those things drive costs. And so, you know, that's where the thing just, you know, it breaks. You've got a system where things are getting more and more expensive, competing against something where they're getting cheaper and cheaper over time. And so, you know, it's not going to be just Tesla, but there's going to be, China is really kicking butt and taking names when it comes to the auto market internationally. That hasn't reached US shores yet, but it's inevitable. And those low-cost vehicles, unless we do something crazy with regards to protectionism, that I don't even know how we, you know, we couldn't keep the Japanese out, even though we hated them. How are we going to do that to the Chinese if they start building vehicles in Mexico or Canada or other places? And then, you know, the consumer at the end of the day is going to demand vehicles at affordable prices.
I get what you're saying, but at this moment in time, Ford can put out a $25,000 truck if they want to. So if the market moves that way where their margins are getting sucked up because demand's not there, they could tomorrow start making these Mavericks that are $25,000. Ford has moved with the market over the last 3 years. So yes, you're talking about MSRPs have gone up over time, and that's because the consumer has paid it. But once the consumer stops paying it, MSRPs, I know I've already heard from Nissan, next year's MSRPs are going to be lower than what they are this past year. So these companies will move with the market. They're just not going to go out of business overnight. And I just want to go back to what you're saying. You're saying that these companies will become solvent. The dealership model will go out or whatever. But what's your time frame that you're talking about when you're talking about this scenario?
Yeah, I mean, definitely we're talking in the 10 to 15 year time frame.
And I think there's nowhere close to that. There in 10 years, there's no way that the dealership model goes out. Now, don't feel like I'm trying to defend these dealers. I hate the dealership model. I hate franchise dealers, the way
this
they
is an
operate.
Awesome debate. Yeah. I think we're just debating ideas here. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not the direction I want it to be. But with legislation put in how it is right now, Ford's not going out of business within the next 10 years. Chevy, GM, Toyota, Nissan, they're not all going out of business in the next 10 to 15 years. But if they are to operate in the United States, they are going to have dealerships. That's not going anywhere.
I think the interesting part of this debate is there is a timeline sort of variable that is saying, okay, so like, you know, let's say Hans and I are trying to predict where this thing's going to go in the next 10 to 20 years. And then there is the reality on the ground today and what's actually happening right now that's given us clues as far as where we're actually going. And then the thought process becomes, okay, does this 10 to 20 year horizon align with what's happening now, right? And I think the very interesting thing that I'm noticing right now from the current players, because I think when we're talking about the future of the auto market, especially within the context of, say, hybrids on EVs, there is Ford, GM, Stellantis, Volkswagen, BMW, Mercedes. You have legacy automakers, every single one of those players that have, let's say, 50 to 100 years of expertise built into the internal combustion engine. That is their only mode of profitability, right? So that's 50 to 100 years. Okay, of the last 50 to 100 years. Then you have a different segment of the car market that has just popped up in the last 10 to 20 years, which is the EV drivetrain, which is Tesla, BYD, and 50 other Chinese players, basically. It's just one American player and 50 Chinese players. And those guys are saying, we think this is going to be the thing for the next 10 to 20 years as we transition, right? The one worry I have with the legacy automakers is, set aside the dealership model. For let's say the dealership model is its own beast, because the dealership model is a way for the consumer in the United States to get access to the car that is based on rules that were written, whatever it's been, 100 years ago, where the dealership model was originally intended to be a way to protect the consumer from being price gouged by the manufacturer. That's why the dealership model exists. That's why it was built. I don't know if that's why it exists today. One would make the argument that it does the opposite, but you know, that we can set that aside for a different day. I think what's very interesting right now is that you have a obvious move towards hybrid vehicles from legacy automakers. Toyota, Ford, GM, Volkswagen, everybody's trying to move to hybrids to respond to the market dynamic, which the market dynamic is not only asking for, let's say, hybrid vehicles, but it really, really what they're asking for is cheaper per mile costs. That's really what a hybrid does. It lowers your gas expense, right? And that's one of the big things that's impacts people's wallet. While they're doing that, they're also trying to bring down the price of the vehicle so that people can get into the car. So that, you know, a Prius, a Toyota Prius, starts at like, what, 28, 29,000 or something nowadays, something like that, if you're lucky enough to get it for that much at a dealer, you know? But the per mile cost for that is the lowest for any gas car, is the Prius. And probably any vehicle, probably Model 3 and Prius are neck and neck. Actually, Model 3 might be a little bit cheaper. But anyway, they're too super, super affordable. But the Prius is the one that everybody knows, because the Prius, you use the existing infrastructure to power that car. You still go to your gas station. You don't have to worry about having a garage or not having a garage. You're super familiar with it. It drives the way you expect it. It's Toyota. Toyota is known for reliability and amazing quality for the price, right? But what happens, and this is like the gigantic if that I think the debate is becoming more broad. What I'm noticing now is that before we were debating this EV transition only within this bubble, right? Which you accurately called, Brandon, this bubble of EV enthusiasts, let's say. But what I'm noticing is that this debate is now propagating to not just the EV bubble. It's starting to be talked about outside of this bubble. You know, that's why we have you on. That's why when I go on other, let's say, more broad channels, I see those comments. I see those comments. Whereas before, people didn't even know this thing existed, right? So let me get to my point, which took me 1,000 years to get to. My concern is that legacy automakers are building a trap for themselves where they are still investing heavily in hybrid and gas cars. And when EVs become, not if, because I think the trends are very obviously clear. When EVs become cheaper to own than a gas car across every single price bracket, what will happen to the legacy automakers that have spent this entire time right now that theoretically should have been shifting to EVs? They're investing heavily into hybrids, which are still gas cars. That's my huge worry. And that move to hybrid, in my opinion, is proof that they're not able to build EVs. They're only building hybrids. Because if they were able to build EVs, and we both know like the benefits they have with the garage, if they were building them profitably, I bet you what the zeitgeist would feel about EVs would be completely different. Would be completely different because the advantages are obvious. Most people that have a garage should have an EV. So the question is, why don't they? It's because the legacy manufacturers can't build them profitably. That's in my opinion, that's the core thing here.
So one thing you said too is when it becomes cheaper for the consumer to own an EV versus the new car, that's when the transitions happen right there. My argument would be, we're already there. The average new car is $50,000. How much is a Model 3?
32 with the EV tax credit, actually.
So we're already there. We're already there, and it's not happening right now. So there's something else. It's not.
But it is happening, though. But it is happening. So the Model Y, and this would be like my pushback on that point. The Model Y is the best-selling non-pickup truck in the United States by far, with no advertising, and it, with an ASP, with an average selling price that's somewhere in the 40,000s, right? So no advertising, no education, electric vehicle only, and it sells more than any other car besides the F-150 and the Silverado. How do you explain that?
So I have a question. Are you able to pull the numbers on that? I know we're recording. I don't know if we can slow it
down.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'd love to.
And production was already behind on the RAV4. So we have a limitation of RAV4s out there right now, not a limitation of Model Ys. So I would say that RAV4 is going to pass the Model Y.
So 25 best-selling cars, trucks, and SUVs of 2023. So I'm going to go all the way down. Okay. So number one was the F1 F-Series, shocker. Number two, Silverado, shocker. Number three, Ram. Number four, RAV4. Number five, Model Y. So RAV4 sold 434 and Model Y sold 385.
And my guess would be either Model 3 or a Toyota Camry. Honda CR-V.
But is that just the U.S. market, isn't it? Right? That's just not the US. Globally. So, yeah.
Correct.
Model Y was the best-selling car globally, but not in the U.S.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. But I still think the U.S. is a good example here, because that's sort of like we're talking about, why aren't EVs the best? Just why aren't they blowing everybody off the roof, right? And I think this kind of talks about it.
And I feel like the Model Y is... You can get a Model Y cheaper than you can get a RAV4.
MSRP, they're going to be close. Yeah, they're going to be close. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So the thing about it is, I know that we've touted the last couple years of Tesla being getting up there to be the top selling car or whatever, but I think it's only because of Toyota's production problems and them holding back production. If Toyota had lots slammed over last year, you couldn't find a Toyota last year. So it's not a fair comparison, because Toyota held back their production so much. If there were as many Toyota Camrys and RAV4s available as there were Model Ys last year, or if dealerships' lots were filled where people could go and buy a Camry, they could go and buy a RAV4 without these market adjustments last year, I don't think it would be close. I think RAV4 and Camrys would blow Tesla out of the water.
But I think you're proving my point by saying that. And the reason why, let me give you the units sold. So Toyota Camry's 290,000 in 2023, and then Model 3 was 232,000. So it sold about 20 to 30% more. But so the reason why I think you're proving my point is that how much market penetration does Toyota have today in the United States? Like, how many people know of Toyota and what they can offer? Right.
I mean, everybody knows.
Everybody. How many people knows about the value proposition of Tesla?
The value proposition is different than, because I mean, you could argue that the average consumer is not thinking about value proposition when they're going to go buy a car anyway.
I would argue that the Toyota buyer thinks about value proposition. And that's why they bought a Toyota, because it's one of the best, if not the best, point A to point B machine you can buy. That's not an electric vehicle. That's my argument. Right. So like if they were, let's say, not concerned about value proposition, they'd be buying a BMW 3 Series. Like, who would want a Corolla over a 3 Series? You know what I'm saying? Do you think that's a fair point?
Yeah, but you're bringing in price point when you're talking about that too. So, I mean, you can have that argument where, okay, if Tesla is at that price point, which arguably it is, the Toyota Camry and Tesla Model 3, they're the same price point. Very close, very similar. So why is it, we're going back to the argument of, okay, you're saying, well, it's got to be that the consumer has to see the price point and be able to afford the car or whatever. And it's just not at a place where it matters on price is what I don't think price is the problem.
I agree. No, I agree with you 100%. But that's the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is, like, Camry and Model 3, from a numbers perspective, they're damn close. And Camry and RAV4 is selling more than Model 3 and Model Y, but Toyota has decades of market penetration and awareness with the market, U.S. market specifically. Whereas Tesla, we saw from the numbers, barely anyone understands the value proposition, yet they're right there from a numbers perspective. So my point is, what happens when Tesla has the same market penetration as Toyota? That's the point I'm trying to make.
So here's the thing, Toyota. The market penetration that Toyota has, there are a lot of other players that have gas cars. There's the Honda Accord. You have the Nissan Altima. You have, you had the Ford Fusion, whatever Ford has now in that, which they don't have cars. But you have all of these other players that are going against Toyota. In the U.S., you got no other player. You got Tesla. That's it. So as you bring in these Chinese models, if to what Hans was saying, we can get them into Mexico and then they don't just tax the crap out of them before they come here to make them unaffordable, then as you bring more of those EV players in here, it's more of a bearish look on Tesla than it is necessarily on the EV market, because when you're comparing Tesla to Toyota, Toyota has lots of competition. Tesla doesn't have any competition.
I mean, Tesla's competition is the entire ICE market. And I think that, you know, on a like for like basis, we do see them out competing. And I think, you know, that's going to be the case for any EV that can provide a similar value proposition to Tesla at, you know, similar price point, similar range, similar specs, that those vehicles are just going to eat more and more and more share of ICE vehicles. Like, there's going to be a shrinking pie for Toyota and everyone else that's really focused on the ICE market over time. Now, that doesn't mean that I think honestly in the ICE market, there's going to be a last mover advantage. And I do kind of see some wisdom in Toyota's strategy not to be rushing into the EV market, because I think that, you know, whoever can kind of leverage their brand to pile the most cash onto their balance sheet during this incredible time of carnage in the auto market, that then they'll really have a lot of options to, you know, do mergers and acquisitions, or, you know, to basically clean up the mess that ends up getting made. The EVs will just continue, like we said, to get cheaper and cheaper. And, you know, I know you want to keep this conversation mostly about the U.S. auto market, and I would agree, but I just want people to understand that the U.S. auto market is an anomaly. It's not the general rule. And there's a couple reasons for that. A, we're not the most important auto market in the world. We think we are, but that's because we don't live in China. China's a way bigger auto market, and it's way more competitive. And the vehicle manufacturers that are rising to the top there are a cream of the crop set of vehicle manufacturers that are just more fit and more competitive than anything else really in the rest of the world at this point in time. And then what we see in the numbers in the penetration of EVs into the overall market is that once in every other country besides South Korea and the United States, once a vehicle market reaches 5% penetration of EVs, it reaches 15% penetration only within 3 years later than that. And then it's just basically a vertical climb up to 25%. The US and South Korea are lagging behind that trend right now. And it's because the US, and or at least my read on the reason for that, is that A, the US has some of the lowest gas prices in the world. And so that value proposition of ICE compared to EVs in the United States, that ICE vehicles have a leg up because our gas is cheaper than most of the rest of the world. But then we also have a much more spread out population, that Americans drive a much further distance compared to, you know, other nations where people are mostly doing urban stuff, or, you know, they're not traveling very far. And so that range anxiety piece is a lot lower in most of the rest of the world. And actually South Korea is one of the only nations where range anxiety is actually higher than it is in the United States. And then incidentally, you see that they're another country that's kind of lagging behind on this whole thing. And so, but all of that to say that even if we slow down the trends of that shift from ICE to EV here, because we are more spread out and our gas is cheaper, that doesn't mean that the overall trend is not going to reflect the same overall transition. It'll just be a little bit slower here. And it's just an artifact of how we really do have it good, you know, from an ICE perspective on our costs compared to most of the rest of the world.
So I want to agree with you on one thing and disagree with you on another. So I do think that the piece of pie for EVs is going to get bigger. That's an obvious statement. I just think it's going to take a lot longer than what probably you and Farzad anticipate is going to take. The thing I want to disagree with you about is that Tesla's competition is really not Toyota, because I think you have two different markets. You have people who will buy EVs and people who won't buy EVs. And at that point, Toyota is not competing with Tesla, because that's not a customer Tesla can get anyway. And people who only want to buy an EV, probably you and Farzad for your next car, Toyota is not even something you're going to look at. So you're not even, there's no competition.
It would have been, what I drive is a Toyota. I have a Toyota and a Honda. So those were my vehicles up until this point. And the reason that
your next car is, I would assume, is going to be a Tesla. But you have those baskets of consumers that are either all EVs, and you have the basket of consumers that are not EVs. So what's Toyota and Tesla can at that point fight over is that middle ground of the people that are kind of on the fence, which I still feel like is a very small portion of the overall pie. I think the mass majority of people mass majority of people that are going to be buying their car next is going to be an ICE vehicle. That's just in the numbers. The majority of the next vehicle is going to be an ICE vehicle. And at that point, that's not, Tesla is not competing with any of those people because they're not even in the running.
I guess, I mean, to reiterate what Farzad was saying, like the reason that I bought Hondas and Toyotas, and I've always bought used, that's another thing. I just don't buy new vehicles.
Hans is the smartest reason, person.
The reason that I've purchased those vehicles specifically is because of the value proposition of those vehicles. And so to me, you know, that's a huge core piece of the Honda and the Toyota market, is that value proposition conscious market. And the reason that my next vehicle will be a used Tesla is because it outcompetes Hondas and Toyotas. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm not. I feel like I am Honda and Toyota's core market. And I am.
So why haven't you changed? Why haven't you changed already? Why haven't you sold your cars and bought a Tesla?
Because they're paid off and I haven't needed, like, my Honda is an 03 Accord. It has almost 250,000 miles. It's going to bite the dust here before too long. And when it does, my next vehicle will almost, 100% be either a Model 3 or a Model Y that's a few years used.
So when we categorize gas car buyer and EV car buyer, I think when we say gas car buyer, like the person that's trying to just buy gas cars, is not really the way I view it. Again, because I'm viewing this through a lens of transportation unit. I'm not thinking about EV or gas car. I'm thinking about person that's trying to go from point A to point B. And I think what most people are thinking about when they're trying to go from point A to point B, they want something that, one, they know it's not going to leave them stranded. So that's number one, is ensuring that they can go from point A to point B. And then you go, okay, am I going to get there safely? Am I going to get there affordably? And am I going to get there every time I want to get there, right? So those are like the, and is it going to do it comfortably? And so on and so forth, right? And the reason why I think we think about gas car and EV is because the EV portion of it, people don't understand, in my opinion, that this thing we just outlined are inherently better for an electric vehicle because that's what it does the best. Outside of, and this is like the gigantic variable, right, Brandon, that you've outlined, where it's like, as long as you can charge, as long as you can charge. And I think that the challenge for electric vehicles is making people comfortable that it's not the gas station that is the thing that's the problem here, is that if you have a way to charge at home, you're fine. And that's the biggest variable. So once they figure that out, in my opinion, It's just value proposition, hardcore. And so that's how I think about the market. It's literally like, what are the variables? And then once people feel comfortable, the electric vehicle becomes a no-brainer.
I was just going to say, and I think you're like, there are hardcore, I want to buy an EV people. Those people do exist. And I would say those are like the far end of a distribution. Like if you have a normal distribution, there's those people. And then on the other end, there are the people like...
And they are owned even. Yeah.
Yes. And then there's the people on the other end of the spectrum that like, they just want their gas cars. And like, there's going to be those people. And they're not going to buy an EV, even if it's cheaper, like at least not anytime soon. Like it's going to take them a long, long time. I 100% agree that those people totally exist also. And then I think, you know, what Farzad's saying is there's that whole group in the middle. And right now, the majority of that group has a perception that we've been talking about today that it's better to purchase a gas vehicle if you're just trying to get from point A to point B in a way that is, you know, reliable and convenient and doesn't, you know, cost you extra money. That if you want something that's cheap and reliable, that gas is the way for you. That I think that is the thing that is, you know, will shift. As it really just takes more vehicles on the road. And so I think this is where we really need to see the launch of the next generation vehicle Tesla here in the United States and have it sell millions of units. Because I think that is the thing that flips that perception, you know, over the next decade from the gas car is the best way to do that to the EV is actually the best way to do that in the minds of that, you know, big core center part of the audience.
And I think what's interesting about that is that that's literally what Brandon led with too. Is like once the $25,000 car comes, we'll find out quick if this is like an EV thing that's a problem, or there's actually something there for affordable cars that people will want to buy.
Yeah, so let me say something that's going to probably surprise both of you, because I've probably come across to you and your viewers as more leaning anti-EV. The next new vehicle that I will buy will be a Tesla. It will be a Tesla is the next new one. I can buy one right now. I can go pay cash for one right now. The reason I haven't bought mine yet, this is why I asked you, Hans, why you haven't got your Tesla yet, because that's what you're leaning towards, is because we're in a house and I haven't built my big warehouse where I can keep tons and tons of cars. I would not be able to keep that Tesla in my garage. That's the only thing that's holding me back. I don't want to charge. I don't want to run a cord out to my driveway to charge my Tesla. It's not a price thing. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that are on the fence that are in that place where charging is an issue. And I don't want to have to drive the car, and I don't want to wait. I think I was with John, Dr. Know-It-All, and I think he said from 0 to 80% was like, what, 20 plus minutes that you got to sit and wait. I don't want to do that.
Supercharger.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to do that. I don't want to find a supercharger. There's not enough of them where I am. And I'm right next to Charlotte and there's not enough of them. So infrastructure, I think, is a problem for me. Not the charging is a big thing for me, and it's not price point. So I think that even if when they come out with the cheaper Tesla, we're going to find out, this is my assumption, that it's not a price thing. And I don't think it's going to be a price thing. I think it's going to be an education thing. I think it's going to be what's the ability of people who want to buy the Teslas, their ability to be able to charge them and to know that they're fine to charge them where and when they want to charge them. And infrastructure has always been my argument for everyone. It was my argument with Farzad when we talked a few months ago, saying that, okay, it's going to happen real fast and we're going to see it. And especially since we're on YouTube, we're friends, we're going to be able to debate this for the next couple years or so. I think it's going to be a long time, and it's not the car's fault. It's going to be the infrastructure's fault. That's what I think.
I would actually really agree with that, you know, we're going to have to see a massive build out of supercharger capacity and, you know, a number of things. You know, we're basically the service and the supercharger network that exists today are, for all intents and purposes, maxed out for the fleet size that we have today, yeah, especially now that we are bringing in other vehicle manufacturers to the supercharger network.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think what will be a very interesting move by Tesla is like when this $25,000 car comes out, is are they willing to, and we're not even talking about self-driving here, Brandon. And this is like the port, like we're already on like this incredible conversation. Have you been keeping track with the new version of FSD, that full self-driving from Tesla at all?
I would love to talk about what I think my direction for Tesla would be going forward if I was paid by. So
if you're Elon Musk, Mr. Elon Musk, what's the direction for Tesla?
If I'm Elon Musk, we're trying to get, at this point, we're an AI, we're a software company. We're not a car company. This is proof of concept right here. We need to sell this technology to every other automaker. We want the dealers to stay there. Let them produce and make the cars, whatever. Let us put our software in every single one of these cars. That's how we make our money. The margins are way higher. And then I take Elon's phone away from him and make him sell X because he is distracted. He needs to be thinking about Tesla and not about anything else. Let's not send anybody to Mars. Who cares? Let's focus right here. What we got?
Oh man, I love it. Brandon's well versed in the Tesla universe.
I try not to be. I didn't want to be, but then people started watching my shit on YouTube, and then I got to know about it. So. Sorry, David, you'll have to bleep that out.
That's amazing. Oh man. Yeah, I think that I really feel like there's this, I almost want to say that the conversation we're having right now, this is going to sound absolutely batshit insane, and we're not going to edit any shits out because we're way into the video, and screw it, we're not going to get demonetized for this, I hope. I really think this.
Money, I don't care.
Exactly. the self-driving aspect of it, that what Tesla has released with the latest full self-driving, and with the clues that we've gotten from Elon Musk on X replying to people, there was a post from Hallmark's catalog that said, here's Tesla's strategy, they should license the thing. And then Elon Musk said, we're more than open to doing that, the full self-driving AI thing. That is being 100% super duper 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 underrated by basically everybody, because we already have a very large segment of the population that are not, let's say, sold on EVs. But there's this one EV company that, and this is where you are near Dr. Know-It-All, right, Brandon? You guys are kind of close?
Yeah, he's in Georgia. I'm in North Carolina.
Okay. Try to get into his car with the full self-driving beta. And with the newest version.
I'm not letting no robot car drive me around.
Trust me.
So I got into it. We did the self-driving thing, whatever. He let me test it out.
Which version? And
I don't. It was summer, this past summer. So got into his Model Y, drove it around, whatever. It was all well and good on the interstate. I'm fine with it around turns, but I let it take us. And then we pulled up to a 4-lane intersection, and he was like, "Oh yeah, saying that we're going to take a left. Let's see what happens." And I don't know. It didn't process that we were about to take a left across 4 lanes. And I said, no. And I took that shit off. So I'm not doing that. I'm not trusting this car to make a left-hand turn across 4 lanes, not doing that. So I feel like I am kind of sitting right dead in the middle as far as Tesla adopters. I mean, you've heard my experience with it. You've heard that. I do think Tesla's a thing. I think it's a good car. And I will be buying one at some point. So I'm there. But the self-driving thing, not a thing for me. I'm more than zero interested. Less than zero interested? Yeah, less than zero interested in that.
Not even if there's a version that will actually drive just as good as you. Zero. It's a trust issue.
There's not a word you could say. There's not a data point you could give me. There's nothing that I could read or even observe in my own experience that would change my mind about this.
Even if you're able to fall asleep in your car and you'll get to point B super safe.
That's even worse. Because the thing about it is, I mean, I understand the Tesla can make the moves for me, but I still want to be, I like to be in control of my own destiny. That's one thing. And also, I worry about other drivers, and there's going to be things that happen that Tesla, maybe eventually it will get programmed in to know when driver does this, this driver does this, it can make the split decision in that second. Okay, we need to go this way or this way. And maybe it's already plugged in, but I'm not comfortable with it. And I won't be for years and years and years and years to be able to say, okay, now if you get everyone on the road and everyone onto the same system, I can get more on board. But when you bring in the human error, the human aspect of it, which you're not going to be able to get away from human beings taking control of the steering wheel, not all of them, all in the same wheel, unless there's some massive government thing, and then there's going to be an upheaval. But if you get into that scenario where, okay, every vehicle is being driven by the robot car. I know I say that, I probably sound like an idiot when I say it, but you know what
I'm talking about. It's correct though. It's 100%
correct. Yeah. I can get on board with that if you got everybody in it. But when you bring in the human element of it, I want to be in control of my own destiny at that point.
I really appreciate that commentary. I think that the most fascinating thing about this whole thing for me is that how mainstream this conversation is becoming. So if you think about the last 5 years of this arc, right? Could you have pictured yourself talking on a YouTube channel about an American car company that only sells electric vehicles that drive themselves? Would that even have been within your, yeah?
Absolutely not, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting about this dynamic right now is that this is going from, the way I'm viewing it, the way I'm reading it, this is going from science fiction to the realities of adoption. The realities of adoption are extremely valid concerns people like yourself and a bunch of other people have, that number one, you have to get them convinced that an EV is right for them. And a lot of people don't feel like that's the case right now, obviously, in the United States. And number two, there's an even bigger thing, which is, oh, by the way, this thing will drive you around. Buy the thing you don't trust and give it control. Amazing.
So here's the thing. I can add to your argument as far as time frame and all the things you're saying. We went from horse and buggy, mainstream horse and buggy, right, to landing on the moon in 69 years. A car driving us around in 10 years, I mean, that's not out of the question of the technology, just showing what the human race has been able to do just in a short amount of time. And I'm just telling you from the time point I see right now and the observation of the people that I see right now, I think it's going to take longer, but I will not be surprised if we're all riding around these robot cars in 5 years. I'm not going to be surprised about that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would not be surprised.
Can I ask you this question? Maybe we'll end it on this. What is the variable that needs to happen where you would be surprised by that? Like that what needs to happen for you to be like, holy crap, this happened a lot faster than I expected?
I think if you get a majority of Americans in not even Teslas, but full self-driving in the next 5 to 10 years, a majority of Americans, I would be greatly surprised.
I would actually agree. I don't think that there's going to be enough vehicles on the road for that to happen that have FSD yet at that point in time. It's going to take a while to build that fleet out. Even if they can if a vehicle manufacturer were to start working with, we'll just say Ford. If Jim Farley pulls his head out of his butt and says, you know what, Blue Cruise is not going to work. Elon, let's just go ahead and start getting the supply chain ramped up and let's equip all Fords, ICE, EV, whatever. And Elon was willing to even provide FSD to ICE vehicles because it's a safety benefit to the world. It's still going to take 3 years before the first Fords start rolling off the line that have that technology in them, probably. And then you've got how many years worth of production that you need to run at full tilt before you can, get that large of a penetration of those vehicles into the overall vehicle fleet. It's going to take a while.